Today on the show, a man many of you will recognize as the Iowa Nice Guy, Scott Sipker, joins us to talk about his new documentary that debuts in just 1 week's time, Kinnick, the documentary. This conversation fired us up, and I think it's going to fire you guys up too. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. As always, let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washoe Ball Guns fans. Episode 343 of the podcast. And today, Kluver shows that he's got a big set of balls to be bringing on the man who produced the legend Niall Kinnick's documentary. Because we all know that Kluver is, without a doubt, the biggest Niall Kinnick hater and denier that the state of Iowa has ever seen. And that includes people from Lames, and that includes all of the Iowa haters in general. Put Kluver on the Mount Rushmore of Niall Kinnick haters. And so, Scott, I'm very interested to hear from you today, and glad to have you on, because Kluver needs to be set straight once and for all, and you're the man to do it.
Well, I appreciate that. It won't be a very difficult task, but I'm up for it.
Good deal.
I wanna interject, Scott, and give you a little rundown about what Drake's talking about here. You are the man of the hour, and we're gonna get to that. Couple of months ago, we had the topic come up on our show. Crazy enough that it took 300 some episodes to do this. Our top five Iowa football players of all time. Now, that's a vague statement, right? Top five based on what? Right.
Especially with football, because each position is so drastically different.
You could go 100 different ways, right? Best, best on the field, best of what they were known for, best by accolades, best by college career, best by entire career.
And this is just players, not just coaches, administrators.
Just players. Okay. I did not include Niall in my top five. I said he was in my top 10. I did not include Niall in my top five, and my criteria was strictly based on, and I will 100% admit this, I am recency biased, but I believe that the game evolves clearly, right? And I was basically talking about who's the baddest, most talented, hold up today in today's game, who would be the best Iowa Five football player. And I did not see 5'7", 165 Niall Kinnick on that list. I think he would struggle to play in today's game. And I preface that. That was my whole thing. Our fandom, I think a lot of people would truly agree with that. Our fans, our listeners, Drake, who loves to gaslight people, and a couple people who really took it personally in our private sort of community, basically turned it into this thing that I hate Niall Kinnick. And so, and
well,
I'm not...
The fact that you don't have him on that, for the record, is you're wrong. Okay. It's not a matter of opinion. it's empirical. The thing about Niall, and he was a little bigger than 165. He's at least 170, probably pushing 175 his senior year.
Okay.
While the game has evolved, whenever we have these types of discussion, I think it's important to always point out that without those players who have come before, the game doesn't evolve this way. And the fact that Niall was able to not only be a great passer of the football, a great runner of the football, he still is tied. Well, he had the record of interceptions for a season by himself until Desmond King a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He also was like the nation's best punter. He was a great drop kicker.
Yeah,
all three of those. Like that's something. And football was more aerobic back then because you had a lot of players. It was starting to phase out when I was there, but he played all the time. And I mean, to have that sort of diversity, I think, is incredible.
He's great, no doubt.
And if I can interject, Kluber, you're misrepresenting the original prompt. It wasn't who are the best football players. Who are your top five greatest Hawkeyes? Not who is the most talented football players. Who is the greatest? Just greatest. You know, greatness doesn't necessarily mean most talented. Greatness doesn't necessarily who had the most accolades. But all that is kind of contributed into the whole idea of what is greatness.
You know? If that was truly, because it got sort of diluted a lot because we brought it up three or four different times. If that really was truly the first prompt, I've said multiple times in conversation since that he is the greatest Hawkeye, right? I think that's even hard. I don't even know who would be second. Like, I feel like he's truly on a tier of his own, and then like second and third, and anybody else is like three or four levels down. I was speaking strictly football. What was the
well, before I one point just to make you feel extra bad, is that I think one thing that, at least for my philosophy, when I'm comparing eras, which is always tricky to do, right? Tough. Because yeah, if you were to just pluck Nile out of the fall of 1939 and you just dropped him today into the game, it would be an adjustment for him, right? The offensive line is huge now. He was still very quick and shifty, and he back then he was built. I mean, they talked about how when you show him his shirt off, it looked like his abs and chest were carved out of rubber. I mean, the guy was stout. But I think you always have to, when comparing eras, you have to compare the players in their eras to the other players of their era.
Sure.
And for 1939, in the entire country, Nile Clark Kinnick Jr. was the greatest player that year compared to anybody else.
You hear that, Claire?
Yes. In fact, compared to all the other male athletes that year, the Associated Press said not Joe DiMaggio, who had an incredible batting average that year, not Joe Lewis, who had four knockouts, heavyweight knockouts, defending his title. Not you Byron Nelson, that, who was winning everywhere. No, the AP picked Nile Clark Kinnick to be as the male athlete of the year. And so I think it's always really important when you're thinking about, like, who is the greatest. Yeah, if you dropped him in now, it would be totally different. But compared to his cohorts,
yeah,
no one in 1939 was better at football than Nile Clark.
And
he's a damn war hero. We're not going to stand for you slandering his name, Kluber. You hear me?
I've never denied any of that. Though for his time, he was unbelievable. I live in Waukee now, so I'm a 10-mile jaunt over to Adel to the home of Nile Kinnick. What was the inspiration for this whole thing?
I see. We'll change the subject. It's fine. No, I'm just kidding. It's a good conversation because, you know, you think college basketball players now, if you drop them back into the 1950s or 40s playing professional basketball, whatever form that was,
they were probably.
But things have changed so much. And I really think that you always have to keep in mind the time period and sure. advancements. And I mean, how big and strong would Nile Kinnick be if he had modern science behind him?
Yeah,
I mean, I wish we could know.
I know.
But anyway,
there's still 5'7 guys today, though. Like, who's to say he wouldn't still be 5'7, 170?
He might just be good enough. I mean, with training and the way the game had advanced, obviously they're not going to have him out there playing both ways.
No.
But then again, how much better would he have been if he was able to specialize?
Well, and that
nobody
was,
worked harder than him, and he's super smart.
I was going to say, it almost makes me question, like, who's he out here playing if they're just letting this guy go both ways and he's still crushing people? Like, some of these guys must be, I don't know.
Well, back then it was a very different game. Yeah. Substitution rules were different. Like, if you came out of the game, I mean, in some ways it was harder, right? Because if you came out of the game back then, you in one quarter, you couldn't cut him back until the next quarter.
Really?
It was a totally different game. Substitutions were really added later. I think the rule back then, by the time Nile got there, was like, you so that was the rule. Like, you, once you went out in a quarter, you couldn't come back. So usually you would sub in your second team with like 2 minutes left in the game, or 2 minutes, sorry, 2 minutes left in the quarter, and give your guys some sort of breather. But Iowa in 1939, they couldn't, like, they only had like 11, 12, 13, 14 guys play in a game because the coach at the beginning of the season, he decided, Dr. Eddie Anderson was his name, he's like, we're just going to be the most fit team there is. So he started spring practice in February and just ran the hell out of them. And guys just, they were like, I'm out. I quit. And so by the time that the fall came around, like, the guys who are there could probably run cross country.
Oh, man.
That's like not training them for the right sport, huh?
Yeah, it was. But you know what? It worked. It worked.
They were
that one season, it worked.
That's unbelievable. So they really only had, so they had a ton of guys going both ways then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think in like the last couple games of the year, they only had 12, 13, 14 guys play for the whole game. And so it was, so these high, these better teams, like when they played Notre Dame and Minnesota, one of the reasons why when they played those teams, and for context, I know I always get upset with the University of Minnesota football program because I always have to take time out of these interviews to explain to people that Minnesota Gopher football used to be dominant.
Yeah.
In the 30s, they were winning national titles.
They won like eight, right? In a decade.
Yeah, it was nuts. Yes. They won like 3 out of 5 there for over a 5-year stretch.
Sure.
So I have to explain it. So Minnesota and Notre Dame were the powerhouses in the Midwest at the time. And really across the country, but it was so much more regionalized then, right? So one of the reasons why it's so impressive that Iowa was able to beat both of those teams.
You hear that, Kluver?
Because both of those teams could sub in anybody at any time, and they would play a full roster, not Iowa, and somehow they just grinded out victories over top 10 opponents, and it's an incredible feat. Really, what they accomplished was so difficult. It's hard to compare to now because we don't have that. But it is just an impressive feat. And I think with time passing, we've lost sight of why it was so impressive what the 1939 Ironman pulled off.
I definitely agree with that. It's almost sad or a little bit scary to like let current day and how much things change dilute the greatness of some achievements by certain people, certain groups of people. It's hard to understand because none of us were alive, right? At least not some of us. And like, once you get further and further away from something that's great, it's hard to, it's like the Titanic, right? You watch the movie and you're like, oh, sweet. Like a cool boat. Like, but back then the Titanic was the shit. You know,
it was the biggest ship ever built.
Right.
And now it's dwarfed.
Right. It's just nothing. But at the time, it's like, this is it. This is the thing.
Clearly not.
And you have to have that step.
Cold water took it out.
Well,
a big old chunk. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so it was mostly bad.
It's a battleship versus
Drake's a Titanicator. So Scott, you're a, When you meet people who don't know you, what do you tell them that you do?
Usually it's always a good question. I always hesitate. I should work on this answer.
Yeah.
It kind of depends on the context and who I'm talking to, but for the most part, I'll tell people, you know, I'm an actor and a filmmaker who lives in Iowa, which sounds like a punchline to a joke, but it's not because I'm actually doing it.
Yeah.
So that's it. I mean, that's really what I'm doing. I have maybe the best life. I'm getting to do what I want to do. Somehow I get paid to do this. You know, breaking it down a little bit more, my major sources of income are public speaking. So if you have any events out there, let me know. I could talk about more than just now, can I, if you need me to. I do stuff on Iowa Public Television. I host a show on there called Iowa Outdoors. Do radio, as you guys know, with Murph and Andy.
Yep.
And then my biggest source of income is actually producing client videos. So if a business wants some help telling their story, I'll do that. I say I'm probably in only about 15% of the videos that I produce. Yeah. So I have, you know, like JR South Pork Ranch at the fair. They've hired me to produce videos. I'm in one of them. I'm not in one of them.
Sure.
Grinnell Mutual is one of my clients. I've done I've been all over the country doing videos for the National Pork Board. I haven't been in any of those videos. I've probably done 30 videos for them. Sure. So a lot of that. So if your business is out there, for shameless plug, I can help your business tell your story. But that's kind of the overarching. I'm an actor and filmmaker who lives in Iowa.
It's not many get to say that when they answer that question.
Dude, we should hire him to make a film on.
I'm not sure he'd
be interested. If you can raise the budget, you know, yeah. I can, money talks.
I was going to say, I don't know if we can pay him that much.
It's fair.
So and tell me if I'm wrong, but the first time that I ever heard of you, and probably most people had ever heard of you, was the Iowa Nice video.
Oh yeah. Duh. I should have said that. The shorter version than either I'm an actor or filmmaker is I'm the Iowa Nice guy, but I always feel like a real D-bag when I say that. Oh. It's like, well, I'm not going to introduce myself as the Iowa Nice guy.
Sure.
Although I kind of sometimes should, because people know that term. But yes, I absolutely, that's where it really got that first thing that kind of crossed over from outside of my circle of friends is the Iowa Nice video. Now that's been 10 years ago. Can you believe that? 10 years, the original Iowa Nice came out.
Drake and I watched it last week to kind of like,
and it was hilarious, dude. I didn't see that 10 years ago. So I was hyped to see it.
The best,
good. Like, it is good.
The best line is just fuck you.
it's that first line. Without that first line, that video probably doesn't get watched at all.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of swearing can be gratuitous. And when you're doing some stuff, like, unless you're doing gratuity for gratuity's sake, you can use swear words in a way that's not effective. I really genuinely feel like this is me patting myself on the back, and Paul Benedict, who wrote and directed that first piece, patting ourselves on the back, saying, Shakespeare would be proud of how we use the word fuck there.
I feel like
it's perfect. Like you don't see it coming, but it's also the perfect thing to say. And it says so much in that moment. And then bringing back fuckwad at the very end. Yes. it's a nice callback. It's funny because people think when that video first came out, people started to ask me to come and do public speaking, but they would always be like, hey, you know, you can't swear here. And what's funny is they think in that video, we're swearing the entire time. But we're not. That's just how effective and powerful and memorable those two uses of the word fuck were. And I'm still really proud of it. We do say shit and bitch in that as well, but just once each. And so, yeah, we're not riddled. That video is not riddled with swear words, but I'm just really proud of how, I just think we effectively did it. Even though times have changed and some of that video is very dated at this point,
yeah,
the overarching theme is still there. And I'm so thankful for that video. I mean, I'm probably not talking to you guys. No, I'll take it back. I am not talking to you guys right now if that video doesn't go viral 10 years ago.
Everybody needs their big break, right?
Going to get back to Scott and our conversation with him about the Kinnick doc in a second. You guys are in for one in the back half of this episode. You're going to hear all about Niall and what Scott did to dig into Niall Kinnick's life. Could not be more excited for that documentary to come out. But quickly, I want to let you guys know that we are sponsored by AdCraft Custom Apparel and Merch. Since 1974, by the way. I'm sitting here looking at their website right now. I know these ad reads can kind of get excessive, sometimes repetitive, monotonous. I don't want to make it that. I want them to get something out of the ad reads. I want you guys to get something out of the ad reads. And it occurred to me that while we're sitting here, just finished up our fall season store with some beautiful apparel that they helped us create. Their art team helped us with the art side of things, right? They also have all of these other stores going on. It's not just like we're their only customer that's using them to create merch, right? Just in the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, you can find dozens of high schools and sports teams using their custom apparel merch stores. I see on here that a community college is using, selling their merch. A couple trucking companies are selling their merch. There's a family farm that's selling their merch on here. So they really do it all, right? And they do it at a high level. And they're handling so many people, so many companies, organizations like us at once. It's pretty incredible. So again, this just makes it even more crazy that they have the kind of customer service that they do. I love working with these guys. There hasn't been a question or something that we've wanted to look into or a design that we wanted to explore since we started with them that they have not at least tried to make come to life. And so truly one of the best companies as far, and we've worked with a lot of them, right? Through this podcast, this brand that we've built, we've worked up with a lot of companies that are trying to sell, advertise, do stuff, combine within the ecosystem of Iowa football. AdCraft is one of the best ones we've run into. So again, if you've got custom merch or apparel that you want to sell or pump out to people, I don't think, at least in Iowa, I don't think there's a better place to do it other than AdCraft. That's simple. I also want to take a moment to let you guys know that we're sponsored by the boys at DRF Sports. Now, DRF Sports, again, in one of our previous ad reads, they basically keep this show running at this point. A beautiful partnership that we've, crafted with them. If I was smarter, I'd use a better word, but the people over there, I can go down the list, Kenny, Jack, plenty of others. They have been incredibly accommodating, wanting to work with us. The communication's a big thing, right? And the communication back and forth between us and the DRF team based on whether it be me going to Osceola and their live sports book at Lakeside Hotel Casino or when they want ad reads done for the radio, it's so incredibly clean. It's very similar to the AdCraft people. And when you've got a company that's got their stuff together, I won't cuss for their sake, but it's so clean and smooth when you work back and forth. And that's what you're looking for. Not to mention they have a $300 no fret bet right now. They have a $25 boost bet that you can get in on and start with if you go and create an account with them right now. You can do that at ia.drf.com. And they, as a sportsbook, are going to be able to do all the things that a normal sportsbook can do for you, all the big ones, except they are trying to focus in on creating and cultivating was one of those big words I was looking for, a relationship with the people of Iowa, brand recognition with the people of Iowa. They want to be the Iowa sportsbook. So DRF Sports, shout out to them for helping us out, being our title sponsor, and being all around great people. And with that, you'll probably hear some more ads get filtered in here. But after that, then we'll get back to the show with our man, Scott Sipker.
You probably, in the way that you use the language in that video, is probably one of the things that you nerd out over being a filmmaker, a writer. It's like the art of it, right? Like you're playing.
Yeah, I don't want to be too stuck up about it. Yeah, I know that stuff can get annoying, but
sure.
Yeah, I mean, you make same with Kinnick the documentary. I mean, there are, we don't obviously have any swears. We have a couple swears from Niall that he really wrote down or whatnot. Like he used the word bitch to describe some people who are just lazy down at working on the base. And he's just like frustrated with them. And it's like, all right. Yeah. And that's ultimately the goal of the documentary, is to remind people Niall was a real man. And like the things that he stands for are not something so far out there that we can't achieve them. Like his good morals and ethics, like we can all do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that people walk away thinking Niall as a man instead of as a bronze statue. But it's using, we make all these choices in this documentary, 90 minutes of a documentary, and we try to do things with purpose. And hopefully all that like essentially is not noticed in the film, like, cause you're just enjoying it and being entertained and feeling the emotions of it. But yeah, everything hopefully from an artistic point of view is done with purpose and not just being gratuitous.
Yeah. The point you make there with him being more than just a gold statue. What a great idea because even as a player, right? I know Niall now that we've gotten into this conversation over the last 2 months, I've gotten to know more about him. But without a documentary like this or doing some serious, like looking into him on your own, like for most Hawkeye fans, he's just the speech at the beginning of the game and the statue out front and just like this superhero figure, but you don't know a lot of details. You just know that he was great. And I guess that
not great enough to be in your top five.
True. And so that probably, that brings me back around to the question we kind of got off track on was like, where does this come from? Where does this idea hit? When did you start doing this and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things, like it, the old adage, I should look up what historian said this, is that like United States presidents, if you're lucky, will be remembered for no more than three things. And most of them get remembered for maybe one and some none. And I think that goes for most of us. I mean, what do we know? What do everybody know about now? Won the Heisman Trophy, gave a great speech, was a wonderful football player. Maybe they know about World War II. And so you have these couple things, but then when you really examine it from 90 minutes, I think 87 minutes of this 90 minute film, you'll learn something about Niall that you didn't know before. And that's not to say like we discovered all this new stuff. We discovered some new stuff, but it is like there's just so much more to the man. And so the idea for this came roughly about 10 years ago after Iowa Nice, struggling to figure out what are we going to do next? Because I don't want to be a one hit wonder.
Yeah.
And I knew that back then. I was like, we have to find a way to move forward. And the first thing we did, we raised $2,000 in a Kickstarter to shoot a pilot mockumentary television show called Marooned, about two actors from the coast who get stuck in Iowa after the tax film credit scandal. And so we shot that. And I think it's really good. It's still out there on YouTube if you want to watch it. Some of the jokes, like the old man jokes, are the oldest character in there is very crass. Probably we'd have to rewrite some of the jokes, I guess. I haven't watched in a long time, but I'm assuming that's true. But it's a good show, but it didn't take off. We didn't have the platform. Sure. So we kept spinning our wheels, and the summer came along, and I thought, okay, I threw around some more Iowa Nice ideas. None of them were popping. And I thought, what if we do a documentary on Niall Kinnick and Jack Trice? We have a built-in audience, and I want to get away from just two-minute videos and be doing longer form feature-length content. That's really what I want to be doing. Well, that was kind of the first idea. One, because I know the stories are really intriguing, but also to be crass about it, there's a practical approach. If you want to be successful in filmmaking, you have to prove you can make a profitable film. And so I thought, well, we can do this. We can make a profitable film on Jack and Niall because we have the built-in audience. And so we started on that path. That idea was like 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
But yeah, had that idea. But that path of actually making the film didn't happen for many years later. Sure. Because that idea, we weren't ready to do feature length as much as I wanted. That idea actually morphed into doing Hawkeye Nice and Cyclone Nice, which that got picked up by ESPN. And then they asked us to do for two seasons college football comedy content on ESPNU. Yeah. So we did that. And that was so important in establishing our platform and showing we're not one hit wonders. We know what we're doing. And now we have a big brand like ESPN connected to us, verifying that we know what we're doing. And also at that time, that's how Murph and Andy reached out to me. And being on Murph and Andy every week for the last 10 years, almost 10 years, it'll be 10 years in October. That has probably been the single most important thing that has happened over the 10 years, because I haven't had to create content every week to stay relative. It was just that now I was on there with Murph and Andy, who are legends and great at what they do.
Yeah.
And that connection has been great for keeping me in people's minds, I suppose, as we 6 years ago actually started to do the Niall and Jack documentary, very quickly realizing we had too much information for one doc. So we split them into two. Sure. And the Jack one's about half done. And we decided to go with Niall first. So that's a very long, rambling, winded answer to answer. About 10 years ago, we we really got filming about 6 months or 6 years ago. But honestly, without the pandemic, I don't think we get this film finished because we weren't getting, I failed at fundraising to pay us to make the film. I got enough fundraising to cover our costs. But anytime a client project came up, like I was telling you about all these businesses that I do work for, that always had to take priority because that was what was paying the bills. So we go 9-10 months at a time without working on the Kinnick documentary, which is why it's taken 6 years. Wow. Then when the pandemic came, it shut down all the other business. So we had time to actually get the film done.
Wow. That's crazy. And oh my God, what an undertaking. And I know you don't know when you begin something like that, looking ahead, like this is going to take me a decade potentially. That's like, if you knew that, that's hard to be dedicated and motivated to do.
If I knew, it wouldn't have happened just because I came at this for a practical reason, right? It's not practical to work on the same project for 6 years. It's not. But sometimes stupidity is the greatest blessing of them all. And so I embraced it.
Yeah.
I embraced it. And there were a lot of ups and downs and rewriting and rewriting. The script is a very difficult process. That doing all the research, scanning all the different documents. I mean, putting it all together, it is a huge mountain to climb. But I'm glad that we finally have, and we're there, and we're just about to hand it off to the world. And I am really excited and also terrified.
Yeah, I think I know how you feel.
No, you don't. You've never made a feature length movie, dickhead.
Yeah, but running out onto the field.
You just talk on the microphone.
It's kind of like that. You're like, oh my, I prepared for this, but also I don't know what's going to happen if I get out there.
Drake, let me draw some parallels, bro. Let me be a podcaster real quick and draw some parallels between us preparing for game day and him preparing to release a film. Just let me do it. You decide you have this idea. Okay. It's finally, you're going to start filming. You're going to start doing the research. I imagine before you ever film anything, there's a crazy amount of work that goes into, okay, we need to find everything that's relevant to Niall and Jack Trice that's out there. How do you even go about that?
So first you start with the books. Let's see where I got them. Oh, like right here, this one, Hero Parish. If anybody's, I don't know if that will focus.
Yep, I can see
it. But this right here is a great place to start. So we went there, you know, you have all your tabs. So you know, you go through the book, you tab everything, color code it to, okay, this goes for this section of the life. Like we kind of had a outline and then, okay, this is the information that will go there. And then there's a couple other books that are out of my reach right now, that we used as well. So, and we reached out to the author. So, Tom Lidd wrote a book called Niall. It's a dramatized version of Niall's life. So he's one of our experts that we interviewed. Mike Chapman, who you might have heard of before, he's written a book and he's in there. And D.W. Stump has written, his book is probably my favorite. He lives out on the East Coast, but we were able to use his text and actually got in contact with him. And he actually became friends with Niall Sr. While he was making his book. So he had some really good information. We interview, put all that stuff, get that idea. And then we are fortunate to come across the man who no one's ever put on film before to interview. And his name is Don Bice. He's in his 90s. He's Niall's first cousin. He grew up with Niall in Adel. He is Niall's youngest brother, George, was one of his best friends because they were the same age. And now, so Don's in his 90s, and you'll see him in the film. He is in great shape. He's a wonderful storyteller. And so he was able to unlock Niall as a person because he practiced with Niall. Niall would throw him passes, punt balls to him. He would watch Niall eat prodigious breakfasts in the morning. I mean, he was there. He saw it happen firsthand. And so we had these amazing interviews. And then, so those people could take us so far. And then we would sit around and we say, okay, what questions couldn't they answer? Or what questions haven't they asked? And then we would get those questions and then we'd start to go move the ball farther down the field. And it's always really exciting. And so we were able to do that. Like a good example is the myth is that Niall, when he heard about Pearl Harbor, ran down to the enlistment office and enlisted that day. Well, it's not true at all. We went back to his letters and the back and forth between his parents and him and his brothers and his friends. And it was this long, drawn out, deliberate process, him trying to figure out, am I going to wait to get drafted or am I going to enlist so I can pick my branch of service? And the Navy, actually, after his, when he was out in New York for the Heisman speech, took him on a recruiting flight. So this was like, you know, this is on his mind. He's not, Niall didn't do really anything irrationally or just on emotion. He was very deliberate. So that's kind of how we start. Find out those questions that haven't been answered. Try and answer those questions and then find out what we find.
Did you, man, you had to feel like you struck gold. That's turn signal Kev, by the way. We need a freaking, he's in his car. So whenever he's turning.
That's a weird turn signal. It sounds like your door's open.
I'm about 30 miles until I'm out of gas. So that beeper going off right there.
Oh, okay. Well, don't run out of gas.
It's gas tank, Kev. We need another button. When you found that guy, his cousin.
It's all right, man. I just crossed the Mississippi River, so we're in Iowa territory. People are nice around here. I'm sure they'll help me out if I get shot.
You'll be fine,
It's one of those flyover states, I hear. You find that guy, his cousin, and you had to feel like you struck gold.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't really know until you get him on camera.
Sure.
But while we're interviewing him, I mean, there's a moment, you'll see it in the film. There's a couple of times where Don breaks down. He was so, you can tell it's so honest, so authentic for him. Like the rest of us, we're tearing up.
Yeah.
His reverence for Niall is incredible. I mean, he truly loves him. And not many people, I know him as well as maybe anybody can at this point in history, other than Don. But Don's going to knows him in a way that I can never know him. Mm-hmm. And so that just comes through. So Don is, I think he steals the show. I think he is, without him, this film is not nearly as good. And so we're very fortunate to have him just peel back the curtain and tell us what it was like to catch a pass from Niall Kiddick. I mean, he did that.
That's crazy. That's
incredible.
The Drake, you got anything? I don't want to keep budging in here, but.
No, dude, that was really cool though, man. I really liked that part. Don just like unveils the emotion and stuff of not.
And he's also got a really good sense of humor. So we just put out a deleted scene. So originally the first cut of the film was like 2 hours, 2 minutes. And so we cut that down to 90 minutes. So we have plenty that didn't make the cut. But we did just put out, if you just go to my Facebook page or Twitter, we put out a deleted scene where Don explains that Niall wasn't really a junior because his father's name is Niall Clark Kinnick. But Kinnick or Clark is spelled the way you would think it was spelled without an E. But his grandfather and mother were Clarks with an E. And so they wanted to honor both families. So his name is actually Niall Clark with an E, Kinnick Jr. So he's not really a junior. But this little nugget.
Junior enough to me.
Nobody called him Niall when he was a kid. They called him June. Niall's nickname is June, which you would never think of calling Niall Clark Kinnick Jr. June, but they did. And so it's a good reminder. Niall was a 7-year-old kid at some point where he'd fall down, you know, hurt his knee, scab up his knee, and he'd cry, right? Like a little 7-year-old would. And I think that's just so important to remember as you're trying to figure out who Niall is as a person. He's like so many of us.
Does this movie come out, dude? I'm so excited to watch it.
August 24th, it'll be available on Vimeo. Right now, if anybody hasn't
like
seen the trailer.
Soon, bro. You got to be pooping your pants. That's like before football season starts.
Yes. Yeah. So we wanted to go after the fair, but before football season. And of course, Niall's number is 24. So August 24th made sense. So August 24th, it'll be available at 7 p.m. on Vimeo. And of course, you'll be able to buy it for the foreseeable future. And I'm really excited. If anybody's listening and you haven't seen the trailer, go check the trailer. Pause the podcast right now and go and watch the trailer.
Because the trailer, it'll show hyperlink you... to the trailer on the podcast, Kluver.
So great. Yeah, please do. It's I'm really proud of this movie. I'm not here to tell you it's a perfect film. I mean, I know this thing in and out, and I, you know, I could spend another 10 years on it and maybe make it 3% better, but art is never completed. It's only abandoned. And it is time to give this over to people. It is time to give it over to Hawkeye fans, to Iowans, to college football fans, to even if you don't like sports. I've had plenty of people watch this because I did this on purpose. I screened it with people who don't care about college football. In fact, they're like anti-sports, and they watch it and they're laughing and they're crying and they leave and they just think so much of Nile. And so I'm really excited for it to go out, but check the trailer out. It'll give you the sense of style, the sense of, we came at this as an epic story. So like our interviewees are in epic locations, big, vast backgrounds to give that sense of space and time. And, I think one of the things, I know I'm rambling, I could talk about this.
No, this is, so this is hype, dude. Scott, this is what we do podcast for, man. We don't, well, people don't want to hear from us.
Well, I love history. Like presidential history and yep. English monarchy history is like this weird hobby of mine.
You're talking to Kevin now.
Oh, okay. And I have.
Yeah, hit me, man.
What? Yeah. Well, maybe sometime we'll break down Edward the First versus Edward the Second at some point in the future. But one of the things that I love about this film the most is the way it's structured, and that we give, because I think a lot of times when you look at these singular figures of history, we lose a sense of place and time. And so what I love so much about this film is we take time to explain what's happening in the world and in America at this moment when Nile is running around Adel. We talk about the Great Depression. We explain what it was like to be in the Midwest at that time, to own a farm at that time. We talk about what the Heisman speech, what the heck is Nile even talking about? We all know the speech, right?
Yeah.
But how many people listen to that speech and have any idea what the Croix de Guerre is? Mostly nobody does.
It took me a year. It took me a year of listening to that, because obviously as a player, you memorize it just being in the stadium. And after the first season, I think I finally looked up like the actual true to form lyrics of the, not lyrics, but the word for word. And I looked into the Croix de Guerre, and I'm like, I got such a sense of like, and I'm 19 at the time, right? Second, you know, I'm about to go into my second year with these guys at Iowa. And I'm like, damn, Nile was 40 times more mature than me. And I don't know, they were probably more mature and had to be more grown up back then anyway, because of the way things were and the time, you know, and now we're soft as shit as kids.
Yeah, I was a little baby dude compared to Nile. I wasn't fighting in the Croix de Guerre.
Dude, like, and I was like, wow, well, this is different. This is different.
And what it is, so we break that down, right? And we give the context, because that's a connection to World War One. Because when I was giving that speech, it's important to know who he was talking to. He had a job that day, and that job was to accept the award, thank his teammates and coaches, and sit his butt down.
Yeah.
He didn't. And so when you hear today athletes being told stick to sports, now Kinnick would be the first person to stand up and say, no, I am not sticking to sports. And that day he didn't. And because of that speech, I mean, we further explain what the Croix de Guerre is and what he's meaning in that and why it's so important.
Correct me if I'm
wrong.
Correct me if I'm wrong. World War II broken out just months before he accepted that award, correct?
Yes. So in the late 1930s is when Hitler invades Poland and we start the Second World War. So all of that's happening at that time. It's swirling in the air. And he's talking to like some of the richest, most powerful people in the country in New York City. And they are the deciders to decide whether or not America is going to get into a second mechanical war. And he's talking to them. And he's again, he was just supposed to sit down. And he didn't. He kept going. And so we give that context, right? And so we take time to explain the world events. And there's so many examples I could give, but I'm really proud. And I hope that when you watch the film, you have a better understanding of the zeitgeist and the Ortgeist at that time. And it makes what Nile accomplished and his teammates so much more impressive. That's why I think it's really important. And we lose that context as we get farther away from that time period. We just think about, oh, Nile being a college student. Well, yeah, but also there was a Great Depression going on and a world war going on.
Yeah, that's it's a good thing. So to drink.
Here's what I want to know is, you know, you talk about finding out who the real man was, who the real Nile Kinnick was compared to the larger than life figure that we've made him up to be. In your research and in the process of making this film, do you think that the real man lives up to the legend that we've made? And how has your view of Nile Kinnick changed throughout the process of doing the research?
I think that Nile, the man, eclipses the legend for me. I started out this film that my team did, Brendan Dunphy, Paul Benedict, and Christopher Cook. We started this out, and I remember I sat everybody around and I said, guys, when we do this, we have to make sure we do not fall in love with Nile. Because when you fall in love with someone, you can't see all the bad parts about them.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want that to happen. I want to show who Nile really is. And so, yeah, was there, and we were concerned, what if we find something that's awful? I mean, Nile grew up in the 1920s and 30s, right?
Yeah. Yep.
They didn't have such great progressive ideas.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of hurdles.
That's scary, actually.
For Nile to get over, right? And we were going to go as deep of a dive as you could into Nile.
You were trying to get Nile canceled? Is this what we're finding out?
No, I was just going to tell the truth. What we found, we would put on the page or we put on the screen.
That's crazy, dude. Kluver hates him, but you were trying to get him canceled.
Come on.
Well, that would be it. If we found something, it would have been, that would have been really difficult. Cause yeah, it could have, it would have been a really tough situation, but you know what? We didn't even have to be concerned about it because Nile was so ahead of his time. And his morals and ethics are they're so much a part of who he is. I mean, Nile wrote in his war journals, he essentially predicted the Cold War with the Soviets.
Wow.
Mind you, at this point in World War II, we are allied with the Soviets. The Soviets are as important to winning World War II as the Americans. And he's seeing, oh boy, I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen after the war. He also, he writes eloquently about race relations as he's driving through the South for the very first time, going from one base to the other. He writes about the struggle he sees. And he later writes in his war journals about I'm paraphrasing here. It's in the film, but that when African-Americans come back from serving, they're coming back to a place that's not going to treat them as well. And he talks about, we need great guidance on this, that we're going to need help. This is going to be a tough situation. And I forget the exact quote, like peace and justice guide our way. And it's incredible. I mean, he's an incredible writer, a credible speaker. But so I didn't have to worry. Like the most quote unquote dirt we come up with is like, that he was complaining that some of the soldiers on base were bitching about having to do work duty, right? That's not dirt. That colors the person in a way that fills them out, right? And that's what I think is beautiful. I mean, he has a sense of humor too. Like he writes about how, I mean, he had to sit when he had to go number two, he had to sit in these large bathrooms with 20 different toilets. Well, you just have these big old guys looking at you. They're on the toilet too. He's on the toilet and he's writing. I think he calls them lugubrious cohorts. I mean, he's funny. He has a sense of humor and we don't think of Nile having a sense of humor. Right. There is one quote in the film. We just weren't able to fit in time-wise or chronologically, but he writes about He went on a lot of dates with ladies. He was okay, looking
my
for.
Okay, yes, I knew it. So I was Scott. I was literally on the tip of my tongue. My next question was, does Niall have girlfriends? Because I feel like Niall
man cleaned up
was a killer.
Niall was a very attractive person, and also after that Heisman speech, he was one of the most famous people in America.
Oh,
that's not over in a statement. He was.
I hope he knew how to swim.
And he was very much he liked the ladies, and he wanted to have a family. He went on dates with many different ladies. There wasn't one. He didn't just have one that he had set his sights on. He writes one of the letters, one of the quotes we couldn't get in because, like I said, that chronologically just didn't fit. And if we put it in, it would have been very much forced, and I think that would have been obvious. But he just writes about after coming back from a date, I think it was with Merle McKay in Kansas City, that he was going to have trouble coming through the door frame because his horns were so big, which is like the old expression for being horny, right? But he does it. He was a young man, right?
Full of course.
Testosterone. And he had the world in the palm of his hand.
AP Athlete of the Year.
Yes. There are some rumors that I heard about some different trips that he may have taken. I couldn't find any verification of some of that stuff, so I didn't put any of that.
I would love to find one of because how old would he have been?
He was in his early 20s in most of these letters that I was.
So he would be
life alert. Now slipped and fall, can't get up.
He'd be right around 100 years old. I'd love to find
he'd be about 103 now.
Love to find like a 100-year-old woman that he went on a date with and just be like, yo, how was
well that? What's interesting, so the women that I know he went on dates with, they all passed.
Yeah,
but we got some of their photos, so I reached out to the families their ancestors. You know, some of them have a daughter or a son who's still alive, or at least grandkids, and it was interesting talking to them because some of them knew about Niall and some of them didn't, but it's also a weird thing to talk about because what if, you know, let's say Merle McKay, which I brought up, she was an actress who lived in Kansas City. She went to the University of Iowa, and so she had a crush on him, and he was almost late for getting back to base on time because he was hanging around with her for too long.
I know.
You know what I mean? There, you know, the way he writes about it, it's pretty clear they were probably making out and they just got lost like you do when you're that young, right?
Of course.
And he had to speed back and he ended up getting pulled over for speeding, going back to the base.
Legend.
But he made it in time. Okay, he made it in time. But, you know, you reach out to these people and you realize, like, Merle McKay's kids don't exist if Niall and say Merle actually are able to take their love to however, whatever place it was supposed to be. You know, and the other families I reached out, it's like a weird conversation to have. Like, did your mom ever talk about Niall Kinnick? Like, how'd your dad feel about that? You know, like it's an odd conversation to have with these people.
That is weird.
For the most. Yeah. I had to do my due diligence and reach out and see if they had any photos or any letters that maybe we didn't have. And it was just
camera phones back then.
Good reminder. They did not have camera phones, unfortunately.
That makes it tough.
That was probably good, but it was good for Niall.
Yes. It was, but again, it's just a reminder. Niall was a gentleman.
Yeah.
But he also, you know, he treated women with respect from what we can tell. I have no suspicion that he wouldn't. Because he was he was a really good guy. But he liked the ladies, as most of us do when we're in our early 20s.
Sure, sure. Been there. The quote that gets me in that trailer is, I'm not sure who it's from, but the guy says, Niall could have done just about anything, maybe even be president of the United States. And from, you know, just from his speech, the way he, some of the writings that you see in the trailer alone, and I'm sure it goes into it in the documentary, man, like it really seems like he was on his way to that.
I think that's what he wanted. His grandfather was governor of Iowa for two terms. And so that was in his blood. And they sat around as a family, extended family. His grandfather, George Clark, they also lived in Adel. So they'd have these huge extended family conversations about world events, national events. So that was in his blood. You could tell while he's writing in his war journals and in his letters, he's got it on his mind. That quote about he could have even been president of the United States, that's actually Mike Chapman quoting Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan told him that. And
holy shit.
Yeah. And so Niall, I think at the very least, would have run for state office. I think Senate is like a, I can easily extrapolate that.
I bet he would have won.
I think he would have won in the state of Iowa. And what's really interesting is that it could have been the 1960 election could have been Kinnock versus John F. Kennedy.
Who is obviously a guy that a lot of people like.
That would have been wild. Yeah.
You would have had two World War II heroes, a Democrat in JFK, a Republican in Niall Kinnock. We could have had that. And
wow. Two guys, two guys who are better than any option we have today.
I'm now super heartbroken that we didn't get Niall versus JFK. Yeah.
Because holy shit. Who the Republican nominee was in 1960?
Kev?
Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon. So, and even if you go on behind that, just think what happens to America if Niall Kinnock replaces Richard Nixon as the party's favorite, right? And we don't have Watergate. How does Niall handle Vietnam? You know, like there's all these different things that why it just gets back to the point. That's like on a macro level, on a micro level. You see in the film, like from Don, and you can imagine from a family's point of view, the loss of Niall on a micro and a macro level is actually really severe.
Tragic.
It is. It's so tragic because this world, as one of the sports writers at the time wrote about Niall while he's playing football, is that this country is going to be okay as long as it has Niall Kinnock in it.
Wow.
And if we have actual Niall living a full life, he's going to have a family, right? And he's going to serve his country in a way that we can all admire. And it's just a real, real loss. I just want to overstate it because you never know, right? You never know.
Right, yeah.
But I think it's an educated guess to say that the country and the world would probably have been better off if Niall Kinnock would have lived out all of his goals.
100% way better. Like, man, that makes me feel bad about being 27 and Niall not getting to see past those years. Cause I ain't doing shit with my life compared to.
Yeah. Clover, you hear that blasphemous piece of shit.
He still couldn't play DB in 2022, but man, he would have been a good president in 64.
I know he got to hit his head on a swivel. His back pedal was quite good for his time, which is why he was such a ball hawk. But I want to push back a little bit. You say, you know, you're not doing shit compared to him. That's what I want to kind of take away from people is no. Like maybe you wouldn't ever have been president or a senator, but you can be a great friend and a great father, a great brother, like a great cousin. You can be all of these things. And at Niall's core, that's what he was. That was the engine that pushed him. He had curiosity on geopolitics and on national events that would have led him to that way, and public speaking, all of these things that you want to have in your public servants. But at his heart, he's not good at anything if he's not a good son, a good father, a good friend.
Man, that's I am stoked to see this thing. Stoked.
I'm sold on
Kinnock. I'm excited for you too.
I already knew that he was way better than Kluver was giving him credit for, but now I'm totally sold.
Maybe, you know what?
Also, you know what he did at Iowa? He also played baseball and basketball. So
really?
He was an all-around athlete.
Trash at basketball, definitely.
And he was president of the school president, right? Or school class president.
Was well, he? I don't think he – I know he – I can't remember exactly what he was in the – I don't think he was ever elected class president. I don't know if he ran for that. You know, I'm going to have to research. I'm going to have to – there's something in my head about that.
You're right,
Kevin. I don't know. Maybe, maybe, Yeah, maybe I'm getting that from somewhere else, but I thought that's what I thought. I thought he was like his class president too.
I think when he turned down the NFL and came back to law school, he was the coach, one of the coaches for the freshman team. So he had that going for him. And he was third in his class in academics his first year in law school. But I'm going to have to double check on the class president thing.
Well, Scott, if you two don't have any other questions, I'm good.
I'm stupid geek to see the movie, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Like, after you guys see the film in a couple weeks or a month, let's come back on and let's talk about your perspective of the film and drill down on any specific questions that you might have, why we chose to do something, why we didn't have something in there. There is a big discussion to be had about Niall's death and the mystery surrounding it that we shouldn't get into here, but you need to see the film and then we can come back and we can talk detail about the film. If you'd like, we can break it down. I'll talk to you guys for hours about it, but, it comes out August 24th. Just search Kinnick, the documentary on Google. It'll take you where you need to go, but it'll be on Vimeo on demand. And, if it comes out to be on any other things, I'm working on a few other things. I'll be sure to let everybody know, but check out the trailer now to get yourself pumped. If this podcast didn't do it,
we will link it in the podcast, copy. And we will also, when we drop this episode, Scott, which is not going to be tomorrow, it'll be on Thursday. So you guys are about a week away from this thing coming out. When you hear this podcast, we will blast out the documentary as well when it drops. So
thank you. And I'll just close up by saying we are a small independent filmmaking troupe, and we really want to be telling Iowa stories in a national way. Like when you see the Kinnick film, you're not going to think, oh, these are a bunch of Iowans who are just making an Iowa film. Hopefully you feel like, oh, somebody from the state of Washington could have made this.
Sure.
Because it's not Iowa centric in that way. But we want to be making a lot more films, and the success of this film really will make those other films more likely. So if you can, when you see the film, tell your friends, share it, everybody out there, just spread the word. This has got to be very organic because, as I talked about our budget, we don't have one. So it is. This is a vital moment in, I think, filmmaking in Iowa, and a vital moment in telling great Iowa stories. So any help that you guys can give us by just spreading the word, I appreciate it tremendously.
100%. I think listening to you, Scott, and hearing all the work that you and your team have put in on this, I think we got the right guy behind that initiative. So thank you guys so much for listening to the episode with Scott here, 343. As always, we hope to see you next time on the podcast, and we hope you enjoyed this one. Until then, peace.
Peace.